one single oyster has about 50% of your daily zinc in it, which I suspect is why they get that reputation, because zinc is such a big player in sexual health.
You're listening to Sex and Love with me, your host, Dr. Emily Jamia. The goal of this podcast is to educate, inspire, and liberate. My hope is that you will learn tools to create connection and cultivate passion, both within yourself and in your relationships. Here's what's coming up in today's episode. Are you interested in boosting libido and improving sexual function without relying on medication? Sexuality is complex, and while there are usually lots of contributing factors, sometimes simple diet and lifestyle changes can make a big difference. Today, we are going to talk about what staples you should include in your daily diet to optimize sexuality naturally. We'll also review what vitamins and minerals you might consider adding to your daily regimen. Finally, my guest is going to let you in on a date night diet designed to prime you for optimal pleasure. And please don't forget that I depend on your support to keep this podcast running. Be sure to subscribe, write a review, and share with a friend who might find it interesting. Let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Sex and Love. I am really excited about today's episode. I mean, frankly, I get excited about all my episodes because I have such amazing guests. And I think you guys are going to find today's topic really interesting. So I am joined by Christine Delosier, who is a licensed acupuncturist specializing in sexual health. She holds two master's degrees, one in acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, and another in counseling. She just released a new book titled Diet for Great Sex, Food for Male and Female Sexual Health. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much, Emily. I'm so happy to be on your show.
I am happy for you to be here as well. I am really interested in this topic because it's something my clients ask me about all of the time. You know, I think more and more people are trying to veer away from pharmaceuticals and medications, and they always want to know about what natural options are available to them. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, I would like to learn a little bit more about what made you interested in the intersection between sexual health and Chinese medicine and food and nutrition. What's your story?
So my story is it all started with food. I'm a big foodie, and I've always just held a deep personal belief that, you know, most of good health comes from how we take care of our bodies and how closely we align ourselves with the biological design of human beings. So that's at the root of it. And, you know, I do have a history as I was trained as a research scientist as an undergraduate, but I didn't end up pursuing a career in that, but I kind of brought that with me to all the information that I give my patients. I'm always asking them, what do they eat and how their lifestyle supports their treatment goals? Because in Chinese medicine, we always want to treat the root. And when we think about the root, we have to think about diet for the root of sexual health. I didn't actually always specialize in sexual health. I treated what most acupuncturists treat a lot of. We treat a lot of headaches. We treat a lot of back pain, neck pain, things like that. And I had a patient who I had been treating for back pain just ask, can you do anything to help me have stronger erections? So I said, sure, yeah, let's give it a whirl. And when he came back to me, he was so happy. And it had made so much of a difference for him and his partner, his wife. Then I had a few patients after that who had really good results. And I thought, wow, this is something that's very difficult to treat, period. Whether you're looking at it from conventional medicine, traditional medicine, it's something that's difficult to treat. So the fact that we're getting such good results really made me want to do this because it had the capability to bring so much joy to people's lives. And I felt like I was really making, you know, a contribution.
That's awesome. And I think to an extent, that's how I feel about the work. When we're talking about, you know, what motivates us to help people sexually, I think you put it beautifully. It's an opportunity to help someone experience more joy in their lives. You know, this is something that most adults are doing or they would like to do more of, but there are still so many hangups and barriers and hurdles that people experience. And so to be involved in the process of removing some of those issues for people, I think is hugely rewarding. What I think is interesting about your story too, is that you also hold the master's in counseling, and there's a huge counseling element, I imagine, in really any healthcare setting, but not many people who actually were trained to do it. And so I'm sure we'll dive into all of this, but you do the acupuncture piece, you do the nutrition piece. I, as a clinician, am always looking at the psychological element. Tell me how you put all those pieces together. Like, someone comes in, how much of what you're doing is counseling them through the psychological problems that may be affecting their ability to get an erection versus the acupuncture itself versus diet and nutrition?
So the counseling is all informal. I don't do any formal counseling with my patients. But I hear everything. You know, when I hear about patients, you know, what's going on with them, I hear about the stories of, you know, their relationships and their, you know, their sexuality, their partner's sexuality. I just bring my counseling background to that, but that's all informal. When I treat a patient, I kind of look at the whole picture, you know, I look at it holistically. So I think, okay, how can we bring more blood flow in the short term? How can we strengthen nerve conduction? When we do acupuncture, one point, for example, that I use a lot is on the perineum, in between the testicles and the anus, or the vagina and the anus, because that's a major intersection of nerves associated with sexual function. So we're kind of stimulating those sexual pathways. We are treating the patient and their constitution. So just like headaches, if you have 10 patients that come in with headaches, you're going to have 10 different point prescriptions, because the reason they have the headache is different, just like the reason people have maybe reduced blood flow is different. For example, you might be dealing with somebody with diabetic neuropathy who has slowed nerve conduction, and that's leading to sexual dysfunction. For other people, they have plaque accumulation, which is occluding the arteries, but we kind of think of it in more of a traditional lens. You know, our diagnostics are more of a traditional lens, but then we support that with lifestyle. So we say, okay, this is what we're doing in the office. We're doing acupuncture to achieve these goals. This is what you can do at home if you want to have even better results. So some patients want to do a complete overhaul of their diet. Other people, they're reluctant to even try small things. So you say, okay, well, where do we start?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Is this something that all acupuncturists are trained in? Because I work with a few acupuncturists here where I live in Houston, mostly when clients have chronic migraines, say, and nothing has helped, or TMJ, I might send them over to someone that I work with. But I don't know that I've ever worked with an acupuncturist specifically on treating sexual dysfunction the way you're describing it. I'm wondering if it's kind of like physical therapists, is there an additional training then to treat pelvic floor dysfunction like they have? Is there something like that for acupuncture?
You know, it's actually not as many professional development opportunities specific to sexual function. There are some. More of the professional development focuses on fertility, and there's a lot of overlap there for sure, because we're thinking about reproductive health. So yeah, you know, you can train yourself that way. And when we do specialize, you know, we focus on a lot of the biomedical, because again, the traditional points for treating sexual health, we're thinking about the root being the kidneys, you know, the root of the essence being the kidneys and things like that. But we want to know kind of why, you know, why are the kidneys the root of the essence? What do the kidneys do, you know, physiologically? And when I have a patient who comes in with kidney failure, I'm not surprised then that they're experiencing sexual dysfunction, for example, you know?
Yeah. So what kinds of sexual issues do you treat?
The most common among my female patients are low libido and difficulty achieving orgasm. The most common among my male patients are erectile strength and premature ejaculation. So those are the four biggest ones that I treat. I mean, acupuncture operates on the nervous system. You know, every substance produced by the body, every hormone, every neurotransmitter is ultimately controlled by the nervous system. And when we stimulate nerve pathways, we affect change in the body chemistry. Similarly, we can balance the body chemistry with food. We can help even strengthen nerve conduction with food, because we can repair damage to those nerves and help that way.
Yeah. I want to talk more about food, because that's what your book is about. You mentioned in the book, you talk about the trifecta of great sex. What is that?
So, okay, most people, when we think about great sex, we think of it as a psychological phenomenon. But physiologically, great sex is when our nerves are firing strong, rapid signals of pleasure to and from our genitals. It's when our blood flow, our blood vessels are delivering adequate blood flow, and it's when our sex hormones are balanced. So that's the trifecta. It's those three pieces. When those are all in alignment, we have great sex. It means that when our partner touches us, we feel pleasure and we get a response of blood flow, and the dopamine pathway in our brain is operating correctly.
Okay, cool. So when I think of food and sex, my initial thought, which is what a lot of clients ask me about, are like aphrodisiacs. How much of that would you say is true or is different from what you're writing about in this book?
Well, you know, my book is mostly, I actually did do a chapter on aphrodisiacs because I figured it was appropriate. The focus of the book is on, you know, long-term sexual health. So it doesn't focus as much on the short-term things, although there's a date night sex menu, and we'll talk about that because there are actually foods that have an immediate effect on testosterone, and there are certain few foods that dump testosterone pretty quickly. And then there are certain foods that will stiffen blood vessels and others that actually promote vasodilation, so more blood flow in the short term. But overall, the whole book focuses on long-term eating strategies. So if you take, for example, something like leafy greens, this is one of my favorite and one of the absolute best foods for great sex. And it addresses that entire trifecta of great sex. Leafy greens have been shown in research to reduce cortisol levels, which is a stress hormone. We're all under a lot of stress. And what happens when we're under stress and when our bodies have higher cortisol is it reduces testosterone. So leafy greens in research were shown to actually help testosterone indirectly through their reduction in cortisol levels, for example. They are loaded with antioxidants. Antioxidants were shown in research to actually help repair nerve damage and strengthen the speed of nerve conduction. For example, in one study where they had type 2 diabetics who had suffered sexual side effects, you know, difficulty achieving orgasm, they supplemented with antioxidants and they measured the strength of that nerve conduction, and it's actually stronger and faster impulses. And they've done studies where they showed that antioxidant supplementation actually improved ease of orgasm, sexual satisfaction, arousability, arousal response, all those things. And then thirdly, leafy greens are amazing for our blood vessels. So they have their naturally occurring nitrates, which give you a short-term dilation of those blood vessels for more blood flow. And then they also, in the long term, they promote vascular health. So they improve the elasticity of those blood vessels, repair damage to the vascular walls, that sort of thing. That's one food we're talking about.
Leafy greens, it sounds like, are very powerful. So when you talk about reducing cortisol and thereby increasing testosterone, and when you talk about, you know, the importance of blood flow and blood vessels and nitrates, I think a lot of people would think of male sexual function, but this is important in women as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. When women have better blood flow, they have better sex. First of all, lubrication comes from blood flow. It's secondary to blood flow. You need blood flow to get the actual physical liquid from which lubrication comes from. And then, of course, just when there is engorgement of the clitoris, it's more sensitive to the touch of our partner. So both of those are very much dependent on blood flow. And women need testosterone just as much for arousal, for libido, and just overall sexual health, just like men need estrogen.
So I can see how a lot of these foods would be beneficial really across the lifespan. Can you talk about the importance of them, you know, for premenopausal women versus postmenopausal women, or younger men versus men who have maybe experienced some decline in androgen, and how it affects blood flow and everything at different stages of life?
Sure. So, you know, of course, our life kind of gradually throws our hormonal, you know, balance off, of course. And certainly, you know, menopause throws a huge wrench in that. But our lifestyle has a huge, plays a huge factor in how much menopause is going to affect our hormones. For example, something like refined sugars, they have been shown to disrupt testosterone, to disrupt estrogen. basically impede our whole hormonal balance. You know, it causes what we call leptin resistance, which then leads to changes in our sex hormones. Our lifestyle has a lot to do with that. And we can offset the changes that happen with age by following certain guidelines that will help keep testosterone, you know, optimal, for example, and estrogen optimal. And when we talk about male and female sexual health, males tend to do better with higher testosterone, but estrogen is important too. And it's the opposite for female sexual health. You know, libido is higher, you know, overall sexual satisfaction is higher when we have higher levels of estrogen, but important lower levels of testosterone.
Yeah. And I think it's so important for women to remember that so much of desire is attached to arousal. And I think a lot of women go back to the male model of thinking about sexual desire, which is this spontaneous, I'm horny, I want to have sex, rather than I'm feeling a little bit aroused. Oh, that feels good. Maybe I could get in the mood for sex. And so I imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that by eating certain foods that promote blood flow and are vasodilators, it's then easier to become aroused, which thereby increases libido, like it strengthens that connection. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's basically what the whole book is about. It's all three of those pieces influence libido indirectly. And it influence arousal. So arousal, you need to have strong nerve signaling. For arousal, you need blood flow for that arousal response. And of course, you need the sex hormones to be in play too, just so you're feeling in the mood.
Because I think desire is so complex. I mean, there are psychological factors, there are physical health factors, there are relationship factors, and we have to consider everything when approaching a treatment plan for sexual desire. So can you talk a little bit more? You mentioned leafy greens. What are some other staples that everyone should have in their diet?
One thing that's sorely neglected in our diets is potassium, especially in the modern diet, because humans used to take in about 10 times as much potassium as sodium in our diets. And now with our highly processed diets, we take in just the opposite, about 10 times as much sodium as potassium. And this wreaks havoc on our blood vessels. And not only that, to deal with all the excess sodium, our kidneys have to flush potassium. And that's when we're not even getting enough to begin with. So I've read a few studies on, you know, the average American potassium intake, and well over 90% of us, according to one study, it was like 97% of us do not take in enough potassium to begin with in our diets. You really have to make a conscious effort, because potassium basically helps remove arterial calcifications, which stiffen blood vessels. It helps make those blood vessels more elastic. It nourishes our blood vessels to help for better blood flow. So, you know, the foods that have a lot of potassium are things like yams with the skins on it, potato with the skin, because about 40% of those minerals are in the skin, something like squash, oranges, bananas. But there's actually not a very long list of foods that we eat on a regular basis that have a significant amount of potassium. And even the ones I mentioned, it's about 20% for a serving. Mm. You know, for a potato, it's about 20%.
How did you come up with this diet plan, and how do you know that it works? Tell me about the research.
That's a good question. So I basically included the things I included in the book all were things that had been researched. Sometimes you have to jump a little bit in the research, because studying food's direct effect on sexual health, there's not a lot of research on there, but there is a lot of research showing that, you know, strong nerve conduction, good blood flow, hormonal balance affects sex. And there's a lot of research showing that food affects hormonal balance, that food affects nerve conduction, that food affects blood flow and vascular health. So that's where all the research focused on. Everything that I included is something that's evidence-based, based on medical and nutritional research that's out there. So that's how I came up with the diet. I know it works because, you know, we do have evidence. We have the studies and that sort of thing. And then, of course, I always try it out with my patients, and I try it out myself as well. I've tried out my date night sex menu, for example, loads of times. And, you know, I serve as the guinea pig, but patients...
there are worse things to serve as a guinea pig for.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a fun one. Yeah.
And I think, you know, you talk a lot about what's happening inside the body as a result of the vitamins and minerals and nutrients that we're getting from these foods. But at the end of the day, you just
feel better when you eat healthier. I mean, I don't know anyone who wants to have sex after eating like a huge Tex-Mex meal. I live in Houston, so we eat a lot of Tex-Mex. I mean, those kinds of foods just make you feel sluggish and tired. And so I think it's just, it's very intuitive. I think if you eat healthy, you're going to feel better. And if you feel better, you're going to want to have more sex.
Yeah. And there's research to prove that too. I mean, after you eat a big Tex-Mex meal, a fatty, greasy meal will dump testosterone very quickly within that 2-hour window after eating it. You know, same with a high sugar meal, something that elevates your blood sugar significantly is going to drop testosterone. And then there's like a fatty, greasy meal is also going to stiffen your blood vessels. Whereas if you eat something like fish, a high omega-3 fat meal, it actually has the opposite effect on blood vessels. They're actually measurably more elastic and you have better blood flow in that 2-hour window after eating. You know, same thing with a salty meal. It just, it stiffens blood vessels. You know, there's a, there are other foods as well that have kind of an immediate effect.
Right. What about other herbs or supplements? Because at the end of the day, people like taking pills for things. We're talking about the important changes that everyone should probably make to their diet to feel better and live longer and have optimal health. But are there any additional like supplements or herbs that you recommend that can help improve sexual function?
I often use cordyceps, for example, with some of my patients. I would evaluate the particular patient on an individual basis, but sometimes I use cordyceps, which is a mushroom. It's a fungus that grows on caterpillars. It's actually a parasitic fungus. It's been used in Chinese medicine for thousands of years. I often actually recommend a very simple supplement, and that's zinc. Of course, you know, you could argue that calcium and magnesium and you know, all those things are important too. They really are. Zinc is a big one though. And if you take something like an oyster, for example, oysters are these, you know, known for being aphrodisiacs. There's a little bit of science to show that. But one thing about oysters is that one single oyster has about 50% of your daily zinc in it, which I suspect is why they get that reputation, because zinc is such a big player in sexual health, in balancing your hormones, in even in protecting you from environmental pollutants and that sort of thing that can kind of disrupt hormones and can damage the nerves and stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, oysters are a lot of fun and they definitely have a reputation for being an aphrodisiac. You've mentioned though, this date night diet. Can you talk about that? Because I cannot wait to try that.
Okay. So I've had several versions of this. And now let me tell you, I love food. So for me, this is such a fun thing to come up with. But my date night sex menu is this. I would start probably with a piece of wild salmon. Okay. And I would grill that. Actually, I would start before that with a nice salad, because salad is one of those things that has, again, we talked about leaves and just how wonderful they are. They're high in potassium. Not only do you get the benefits that we talked about, but potassium was one of the things that actually had an immediate effect on blood flow. So better blood flow in that 2-hour window after eating it with a high potassium meal. So we have our salad, which has naturally occurring nitrates, which immediately dilate blood vessels. And if you think that this is, you know, a small impact, it's not like a Viagra, but consider this. In one study, for example, participants ate one serving of spinach, just one. They measured their salivary nitric oxide, which is what dilates blood vessels, 2 hours after eating it, at which time their nitric oxide levels were 8 times that of baseline after one serving of spinach. So it is a significant effect. So I would start out with maybe a spinach salad, throw some lemon and maybe some pepper on there, hold the salt. With it, I would bake maybe a butternut squash or an acorn squash. I'd sprinkle a little aphrodisiac cloves and nutmeg and cinnamon on it. Then for dessert, I would probably go for something like a polyphenol-rich oranges with raspberries. So the polyphenols also help dilate blood vessels within that 2-hour window. What we're holding is the greasy fats that are going to tank testosterone, and we're holding the sugary sweets that are going to tank testosterone, and only including those foods that help with blood flow.
The way you describe that meal just sounded delicious. So thank you. You mentioned you know, high fat foods, greasy foods, sugary foods, any other foods that might be a part of people's daily diets that are actually bad for sex?
Salt is a huge one. Yeah. Yeah. That was the three that are like the worst. It's like the opposite of the trifecta for great sex. It's like the formula for bad sex, you know, high salt, high sugar, high fat just works against that whole trifecta.
Yeah. So pay attention to what she's saying. Anyone who is planning a date night, pick a restaurant where you can get some of these food items. I'm going to come back to aphrodisiacs for a second. We talked about oysters, and I know, you know, the science to back up aphrodisiacs is questionable, but what are some other foods that research has shown to possibly have a more immediate effect?
Everything I included in the book, I had a whole chapter on aphrodisiacs. They were all things that had some science to back them up, but we're not talking about a lot of science. It was like a few studies. Usually most of the things I included had a few studies showing some improvements. But some of the fun ones are things like cloves. Cloves were shown in research to actually have an immediate effect. So if you think about something aphrodisiac, we always think of it as a food that's going to make us horny. But, you know, aphrodisiacs, of course, are classified as things that either improve sexual performance, arousal, or desire. And so a lot of these aphrodisiacs were shown in research to raise testosterone in the short term or to improve blood flow. Some of them actually acted through their antioxidant effect, which I thought was really interesting. Things like nutmeg and cloves are fun. Saffron was one of the culinary aphrodisiacs that actually had a lot more research than the other ones. And its history goes back, you know, thousands of years. And, you know, Cleopatra used a half a cup of saffron in her baths to prepare herself for her lovers, which is a whole lot of saffron considering how expensive even a little tiny amount of it is. But when we have saffron, we have more sex, better blood flow, have higher desire and more, you know, stronger libido. So yeah, saffron's a fun one. There are some herbs too that had some research. Most of the herbs, unfortunately, their safety margin was not great. So the dose required to have an effective response was dangerously close to the dose that would have a toxic effect. And things like that would be, you know, Spanish fly, for example. Spanish fly is probably the most famous aphrodisiac, and it has a long history of deaths associated with it. It works because it irritates the genital tract, the urogenital tract, and causes blood flow because of its irritation. So people do get stronger erections or, you know, just more blood flow in general. But yeah, that was one of them. There's things like Damiana and there's things like horny goat weed, each of which had some research, but again, the safety was questionable.
Yeah. And I think that is true for really any supplement you're considering taking. I had a friend who took too much zinc not too long ago and was violently ill. And so I think it's just really important before starting anything to talk with your healthcare provider. But I'm pretty sure every healthcare provider would agree that getting those leafy greens in and eating a well-balanced diet is a good idea.
Yeah. And just a word on the minerals. That is actually one thing that I talk a lot with my patients about is, you know, focusing on one mineral can, yeah, be dangerous, especially you don't ever want to be taking mega doses of particularly of minerals. They do compete in the body. So if you take magnesium, for example, you inadvertently suppress calcium absorption because they compete for binding sites in the body. You know, iron competes with calcium, you know, calcium competes with magnesium. So if you're going to have a multi-mineral supplement, that's fine. Take it at a lower dose, you know, one that we're talking about, like maybe 25% of your daily, you know, your RDA, so that it's not as much of a risk of that sort of thing happening. And then again, we talked about zinc. Zinc's a big one, but I wouldn't be going into taking mega doses of it. Very small doses and see how you respond to it.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. It's hard to go to the store these days and find anything that's not like maximum dose, you know? And I've just always believed as much as you can get your vitamins and nutrients from the foods that you eat. And it sounds like your book is a great resource for that. So where can people find the book and learn more about you?
So my book is available on Amazon.com, Diet for Great Sex, and I'm on Instagram, Diet for Great Sex. I'm on TikTok. I have some recipe videos at Diet for Great Sex as well. And my website is dietforgreatsex.com.
Awesome. Well, that's easy to remember. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining me today. I will put all of Christine's info in the show notes for anyone who wants to learn more. Thanks for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe so that you don't miss any of my other guests that are coming up soon. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Sex and Love with me, Dr. Emily Jamia. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend or partner. I release an episode every other Monday. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Dr. Emily Jamia. If you and your partner are struggling with emotional and sexual intimacy, check out my online workshop available at www.emilyjamia.com. See you guys next time on Sex and Love.